Hello, this is the podcast for our class number 22 on November 10. And we continue to, in this class, to talk about assumption of risk as an affirmative defense. Remember, we're not looking at the defendant's conduct anymore. It's the focus here now is based on either what the plaintiff signed, agreed to, or did the plaintiff assume the risk and relieve the defendant of their duty of care? And that's the heart of assumption of risk. And there are two types of assumption of risk, as we talked about. Express assumption of risk and implied assumption of risk. And implied assumption of risk, many times you'll see it broken down into subparts. That is primary implied assumption of risk and secondary implied assumption of risk. But, you know, first we'll talk about, express, that's just a waiver, a release, an exculpatory clause. All it does is release the defendant from any duty of care. You, by signing something, by agreeing, by checking the box, when do you release the defendant of their duty of care so that it doesn't even go forward? You don't, the case doesn't go forward. It's not a matter of continuing the case to the end. It drops it at summary judgment. All this, all the defendant says at the summary judgment stage is, instead of saying, you know, there's no evidence, you say, there's, you know, here's the waiver. I had no duty of care. So a waiver can be a complete bar to the activity. Basically, they just eliminate the duty, stops it at summary judgment. Courts will uphold waivers, but they have to be clear on their face. They have to say what they're, they have to say the risks that are being assumed, the risks that are being waived. It can't be, you know, vague language. Must be clear on its face, and it has to be valid in a public policy. It can't. The idea of voiding a waiver for a violation of public policy is that the activity for that you're waiving the responsibility for is one that has public policy implications. So we saw in the case with the ski area, the Dalyuri case, it was a Killington ski jump. It went like a hospital, but the court still decided that it was there were the public policy implications of allowing this waiver to survive were just too great. The waiver was written fine, not a drafting problem, written very well, clear on its face. The court says there's a public policy against allowing these property owners, people who put their property, put their recreation facilities, whatever, open them to the public, even though they're not public services. They are opening to the public, so there's services in that respect. They have there's a policy against allowing these waivers to survive. The case, a good case that, you know, you never go wrong in using the Tunkel factors in deciding whether there's the waiver to be valid. The court here looked at the six Tunkel factors and made the analogy to premises liability, which, you know, well, just means that the owner is in total control of the premises. When they allow people on for these business purposes, they should have a high standard of care So premises liability already provides a framework for the court to have looked at this and decided that the public policy under Tunkel, the idea that it was premises liability, that the owner of the property is the one in total control and is the one to best know the dangers, to invalidate this, they all kind of invalidate this release that was signed by the plaintiff. Then we looked at implied assumption of risk. When just by your conduct you are said to assume the risks inherent in whatever activity you're doing. And we saw my favorite case, Murphy v. Steeplechase. Cardozo case, beautiful, you know, flowery language that you can't believe. It's unclear whether Cardozo is saying he assumed the risks, so released him, the plaintiff assumed the risk, so the defendant was released from duty, or the defendant wasn't negligent. Cardozo talks sort of both of those factors, but I think the factor that he was looking at most closely was the release from duty, no duty. And we know that Cardozo thinks of duty as the primary question in the case of negligence. So it definitely does look like he was being released from duty. But definitely what Cardozo is saying here is that you can assume the risk of an activity. You knew what you were getting into. You can't now turn around and claim that you were injured when what happened to you was part of the sport, was part of, you know, maybe it was worse than you expected, but it was why you went on the ride in the first place. So the Murphy case sort of segues into this whole area of assumption of risk for participating in sporting events. And it is, in New York, can be a complete bar. It's alive and well. Assumption of risk, although after, since assumption of risk really is a old contributory negligence doctrine, there were real questions about whether it was going to survive under comparative negligence. We just call it anytime you impliedly assumed a risk, just call it negligence and something to compare. But courts have, and particularly in New York, courts have used over and over again participation in sporting events as a complete bar to a negligence action, that you have assumed the risk inherent in whatever sporting event you're participating in. And courts will have tended to kind of say whatever injury occurs is the risk that is inherent. But they will make exceptions. They will look closely. It's very much of a factual analysis. What was it that caused your injury? Was it just getting poked in the nose during a boxing match? Well, you know, that's inherent. Or was it a negligently maintained wrestling mat that cut you when you were wrestling on it, that you were that was injured by wrestling on this negligently maintained mat? Not an inherent risk, possibly. So courts look very closely at the question, what is an inherent risk of the particular activity you were participating in? And then we finished with the idea of, can there be the possibility that you've been reasonable in assuming the risk by participating versus unreasonable? And if you were reasonable, can't that have taken the duty away from the defendant? And if you were unreasonable, can't it just be negligence on your part for the to be compared with the negligence on the part of the defendant. The difference between secondary reasonable and unreasonable assumption of risk is something we'll talk about in next class with Davenport.